Keenan and Ehrlich. This is a pretty good sound thing. Editing in the future.
The door, that actually sounded just like a movie.
It really did.
I forgot my bike was outside. I'm putting it in the garage, and I opened the little side door to the garage. That has such a good squeak to it. Hold on, let me do it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. All right.
Okay, we have our outro now.
Tried to get away with it. Didn't work. All right.
Following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast, VPC/SiliconVP edition. We are deeply apologetic to our many fans for letting this go unaired for such a long period of time. We had a group meeting when we very well could have podcasted back in Evansville, Indiana, but we didn't. And there's just been a lot of stuff in the interim. We've had guests here in Atlanta that have both been sleeping in our podcast studio. Just the house has been full of people in preparation for big birthday parties, and we're ashamed. I feel like I can speak for the entire group at the Munich Movie Club when I say we are ashamed. I think that's just a general.
Wait, hold on.
It's just a general. Bye. Feeling that we occupy,
but that's your Catholic guilt kicking in.
Sure.
We by meeting you mean we were playing golf together. Well, you were driving a golf cart, and Shane and I were playing.
I was doing that. Yes, that is true. But there were many Mediocre Movie Club members in the same location. Theoretically, we could have thrown something together. No. And at some date in the future, there may be an episode of Shane's musings and ramblings, some of which appeared on the Mediocre Movie Club Facebook site. Those may all get patched together into an episode and put out to everyone's great appreciation and excitement. We'll see what happens there. We've been talking about it for weeks now. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is only Brian Hartman.
That's me. You heard me already.
We are discussing two episodes of Silicon Valley. There was a week where Veep did not air one. And our thinking was, just as when Veep aired an episode by itself, we would do the same thing with Silicon Valley. And then that, again, pushed us off a week. And we're behind, and we're going to try and catch up this weekend. We're talking about episodes 7 and 8 of Silicon Valley, entitled The Patent Troll and the Keenan Vortex. And we'll later be talking about episode 8, a Veep entitled Judge. So Keenan and Ehrlich, I don't remember exactly where in episode 6 they had left it. I believe that Ehrlich was dangling Keenan in front of Bream Hall at this point in the season. He's just desperate for something to do regularly, and Ehrlich attempts to parlay his bringing Keenan to Bream Hall into a job. They just want to pay him a finder's fee and get him out of there, but he is so desperate that he allows Monica and Lori to chop his finder's fee in half in exchange for an office. So he gets what he wants there, and then he builds on that by becoming the key man with Keenan, which comes with no extra pay and no position, but it does allow Keenan a way out and a way for Ehrlich to feel important. The key man meaning that as long as Keenan is operating with Bream Hall and being funded by Bream Hall, Ehrlich has to be there. If Ehrlich leaves, then the contract can be voided and Keenan can walk away and Bream Hall can get their money back.
Can we talk about when Ehrlich met with Lori and the other lady?
Sure.
Monica. And at one point it says, it would look like I was fired. And Lori just straight says, that's fine. But... I so appreciate her personality in the show.
I also really like that they don't suddenly appreciate Ehrlich or admire him by him bringing Keenan into the fold.
Oh, absolutely.
Like they still keep him at arm's distance. Yes, like you did this good thing. We don't give a shit. Here's money for you to go away.
Right.
Like
very, very calculated.
Yeah, it would be easy for them to be like, okay, you've got a chit now with us, or like, what do you want? We'll give you the benefit of the doubt going forward.
You take, you contrast them with Richard's character, and he's like emotionally all over the place, depending on what's going on, and they are just stone cold. I love it.
Yeah. Ehrlich now being tightly wrapped up with Keenan. The next step is to bring Keenan into Pied Piper. There's a series of events here that cause a rush on the insurance company claims. It gets cold in California all of a sudden and people freak out. Bills are called due by their storage company, whatever infrastructure thing that they use. This is where I kind of get lost in Silicon Valley generally, like storage fees, router fees, whatever they were.
Yeah,
storage?
They're using Microsoft Azure.
Okay, gotcha.
It's like Amazon Web Services or MediocreMovie.club simply uses Weebly, but Weebly's using somebody else. Gotcha. We don't know who they're using.
Okay. So all those bills are called due far earlier than they anticipated them to be. They can't raise the rates with the insurance company. So in desperation, they go to Keenan for money. And during a late night VR sesh with Dinesh and Guilfoyle, they discover that the algorithm, Pied Piper's algorithm, when incorporated into Keenan's VR hardware, software, it solves a lot of problems he's been having. And Keenan, in this episode, episode 8 specifically, is revealed to be a person who is cheerful about his selfishness, but he is a very selfish person. He's going to get what he wants, no matter the cost. And he wants to buy the company from Richard, incorporate it into his company. And everybody will be happy. The internet thing can still happen. Keenan's VR can improve. And the key to all this happening is the key man, Ehrlich, quitting his job in exchange for like real value in Keenan's company. He gets a percentage, he gets stock, he gets a position, and Keenan is in turn funded by Reviga, more than what Bream Hall gave him, which allows him to buy Pied Piper at an inflated price. Richard agrees, everything's happy. There's a slow motion champagne party in under the palapa, but alas, there's still 10 minutes left to go in the episode. Rick, go ahead.
I'm gonna jump in now. I'm looking at my notes here. I have none of the main storyline, and I love this episode. There was so many other things going on that I thought were fantastic.
Yeah, I thought this was an absolute highlight of the season.
Right, but I don't think it had really anything to do with the VR. I thought it was, or that storyline. I don't really care for Keenan. He's fine, but I don't think he's very funny.
I really like the contrast makes with Richard. Like he's another Titan, would be Titan.
Right.
It's just things are going well for him. And
let's go back to Microsoft Azure for a second. And when Jared calls them and makes up his fake persona at Chambers.
We'll put a pin.
Are we
going
to get there? Are we going to get there?
Because
that's what
that.
I'm most excited
we'll revisit.
For. Okay.
We will absolutely revisit that. Right. We could not go through this episode and not talk about Ed Chambers.
Okay.
So after the champagne party, Richard goes to talk with Monica, and she breaks a lot of rules to do this, but she does tell him that Keenan's tech is no good. It only works if it's played on a top of the line PC. That costs like five figures, and the average user will be far, far away from that, to say nothing of your average phone user. And she convinces Richard to pull back, but at this exact moment, Richard is saved from having to tell his team that they have walked out on being rich, because Keenan's company has now been bought by Hooli for even more than what Reviga was going to pay them. Ehrlich is out of everything. He's got nothing. He quit his job freely. I wonder what that's like. And he no longer has points with Keenan's company. So he's back to square zero.
Are we going to talk about why Hooli bought out this company?
Yes.
Okay.
Hooli bought out this company because in episode 8, Jack, the CEO of Hooli, he of the triangles, is deeply self-conscious about replacing Gavin Belson and his phenomenal presentation skills, which are revealed to be fine, I guess.
Right. Very great. Very Apple great, CEO skills.
Yeah. Just a great juxtaposition mundane of them raving about it and him just holding up a laser pointer and speaking about tech features. So because he doesn't have anything, because Jack doesn't really have anything in the chamber to measure up to Gavin Belson, he buys Keenan's VR company, and that is then the centerpiece of the upcoming HooliCon. Also in these two episodes, and this is, I feel like this is, especially having seen episode 9, which we'll talk about in the next, we'll try and get that out to our dedicated listeners as soon as possible. But Richard is like on a sliding morality scale in these several episodes. He's got his goal of an internet for everyone, a free internet, and he is cutting a lot of corners to get there, both with his team and with rivals. Like episode 7, titled The Patent Troll, it's just a one-off thing. It doesn't seem like that is going to come up again, but it fits very nicely into just a one-episode box where Richard is being sued by a patent troll who has just some nonsense, overly broad patent kind of thing that happens all the time. We'll revisit that in real-world similarities. he tries to get other small apps of Pied Piper size to band together against the patent troll, but he is unlike Gavin Belson, he has horrible presentation skills, and they all turn against Richard and go to the troll, and then the troll is asking more from Pied Piper. And long story short, he ends up lying to the troll about a patent on one of the troll's patents, and he gets the troll to go away. He gains no financial benefit from any of this. This is all just personal. It actually ends up costing him like $2,000. So that's one example. And then, as we said earlier, he's lying to his team about getting out of Keenan's orbit. If he loses all these guys, then that's more or less the end of his algorithm and Pied Piper and everything else. And this is all for the good of his company, but he's losing pieces of himself along the way. It's nice HBO drama peeking its way into HBO comedy. And
are we ready for the side stories?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. I'm ready. In episode 7, a few episodes ago, I brought up how dumb the doctor was. He's back in 7, and it's an awful start to the really 7 starts like with the dumb doctor. Doctors aren't that dumb. He's like making fun of Richard. Doctors don't do that. At least no doctor I've ever been to. We have never, I don't know if we want to talk about this now. Maybe we can put a pin in this for next week. I stole your saying. We need to talk about the intro graphic on Silicon Valley.
And sure, let's talk about it now.
Well, I don't have it pulled up in front of me. I only made one quick note, but I find it, I think it's great because they change it based on who's popular. Mm-hmm. And they've got like real life tech companies. And I'm always distracted by the Lyft and Uber balloons smashing into each other.
Those are very distracting. They pull focus.
Right. And so I think that that's one of the better intros I've ever seen in the show.
I haven't noticed anything new this season, but I'm not paying that close of attention.
I keep staring at those balloons. Really. Yeah, it's the balloons' fault.
I keep thinking like Uber is going to shrink and like Lyft is going to get bigger and like bounce it off the screen or something.
I heard Lyft is now like 25% of the ride sharing market.
That's it?
Yeah, but that's actually way up.
Okay. Because
Uber goes through their sexual harassment issues.
Sure. They're on the cover of Time this week, and not in a good way.
I only hear it on the radio or podcasts. There's been a lot of we'll save that. At one point, help me with a name here. Works for Pied Piper, long hair.
Guilfoyle?
Guilfoyle. He has a line comparing robots to humans, and he just says, humans are shit. I thought that was pretty good.
That's surely in relation to the refrigerator, I would imagine.
Well, that's where this is. No, I don't know what he was talking about. But then him trying to hack the refrigerator is one of the best things to happen this entire season.
Pretty strong payoff with the mime. Yeah. doing a pretty solid fellatio.
Even without the payoff, just like the amount of energy he puts in to spiting Jin Yang's refrigerator. Sure. And like hacking that password is just glorious.
He calls it solutionism, which I feel like is an interesting concept. I've never heard that before. It certainly makes sense in the context of the show. Like, okay, I need to be able to see what's inside my refrigerator without opening my refrigerator. Did I really need to do that, or could I have just opened the door?
Right. Are we ready to talk? Wait, I have one more thing before we talk about Ed Chambers. When Ehrlich is asked to keep score in basketball, at one point he says, "Three-pointer? What are we, in Europe?" Just no clue how basketball works.
Him being scared off first by the basketball, the idea of playing basketball, and then more so by the idea of shirts versus skins. It's pretty funny.
Oh, man.
So, Ed Chambers.
Yes. My favorite part about it, I'm going to get my favorite part out of the way.
Go ahead.
Is when Ed Chambers' line that he eats Jared's lunch every day. Just Jared bullying himself and enjoying it is just so weird.
I'm almost at a loss for how incredible of a physical performance it is. Like, his face changes, his posture changes. It's amazing. Like, Zach Wood, like, the Emmys are coming up. Emmy nominations, I think, are coming out in a week or two, maybe. Definitely July in some point. If anyone was going to get it from Silicon Valley, who, by the way, has experienced a cratering in the ratings since they're not paired with Game of Thrones anymore. Veep, even more so. Depressing. But if anyone from Silicon Valley was going to get, like, an Emmy nomination, it would have to be Zach Woods, who plays Jared. To match that, like, physical performance with, like, the character not being able to tell the difference between Ed Chambers and himself, like, talking about Ed Chambers as if he is a real person and he was awesome and we're going to miss him. Pretty great. Easily the best thing in these three episodes of Veep in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's one of the few things, like, I'm tempted to go back and watch again, is him acting as Ed Chambers. He just plays up the bro attitude and nails it. That's fantastic.
That he doesn't think to, like this is working with these, like, customer service over the phone people, that he doesn't think to incorporate that into his sparkling Jared personality.
Right. And then he's generally upset that he had to fire Ed Chambers.
Even though he was his superior. Right. I can't believe he got the cojones to tell his boss to leave the company. I mean, that was impressive, Jared. Good job.
Right. I think he tells it to Richard. Richard has no idea what he's talking about.
So, real world similarities for Silicon Valley. The patent trolls jumps out. Podcasts in particular, like, we could potentially have personal audio out of Houston suing the Mediocre Movie Club for our, I don't know, what, like, $50 is our max. I feel like just the postage would bankrupt us.
Right. We gave it all away to that kid to go to UE from Brazil, so now we got nothing left. Yeah, I feel like we could talk about the patent trolls. They honestly, like, I've heard podcasts from NPR and Planet Money and Freakonomics and This American Life. Like, those people kind of just make me sick at this point. I feel like they're almost like high-frequency traders. Like, what marginal gain are they adding to society? Do you want to dwell on trolls, or do you want to hear my real-life compare here?
Please. Either one. I'm down for either one.
My real-life compare is when I worked at Scana Energy in Georgia, and I was writing call volume prediction formulas. The most significant variable to predict how many people will call in any given day is the high temperature for the day. So when you take an area like Atlanta or California, we were selling natural gas. Like, mm-hmm. If the high was only going to be like 40, it was like all hands on deck. Everyone literally does call and has a total meltdown. Like, they nailed it with the extra server space needed. We always had to make sure everybody came in, and sometimes higher temps for those days.
And that was calls about people's natural gas supplies. Just verifying that they had them.
Everything.
They're just calling to say, is everything fine? Yes. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Like, they actually realized that they had a natural gas plan, but they used so little of it until those days. And then they would call to either change it, quit, make sure it's there, do something. We always just got a ton of calls.
Okay.
On the cold days. So that was 100% accurate.
Okay, gotcha. I was connecting the dots in my head. I thought you were still on patent trolls for a second.
No.
And then you had some jerk from wherever say, actually, I patented your high frequency, whatever the fuck. No, okay. Yes,
I don't
want
to talk about patent trolls.
Yeah, they are depressing. It's depressing.
Yes.
My only other one was Keenan's overpowered demo. Like E3, the big video game conference, is a thing that just happened. I'm sure that is a thing that is always happening there. Like, you stuff a PC full of state-of-the-art equipment, and then you run your game on there. The average person is going to have nowhere near that. When I used to be a PC gamer, like in the...
Which there's still time for.
90s, there is. 90s, 2000s, and just having to always be concerned about specs and upgrades and that kind of shit. No, thank you.
Right.
I like just firing and forgetting with an Xbox.
Hey, I have that same note on here, actually, for episode 9. It says, real life compare, bad E3 presentations.
That will definitely come up in our future episode. So, favorite moments from these two episodes of Silicon Valley. I mean, can it be anything else but Ed Chambers?
Right. We can do runner up.
Sure.
I kind of appreciated Richard's facial expressions after the loss of the deal, where he's like trying to act like he's sad, but being a tech nerd, he can't come up with the right facial expression.
I'm sure I've mentioned this in a podcast where a good actor is portraying a guy who was a bad actor. I just really appreciate that, because I'm sure Thomas Middleditch, he's having to teach himself to act badly or make himself act badly in that scene. Whereas to do that, he's acting well. I don't know. It's just a nice little benzene ring that I appreciate.
One more thing. I have a note that says cold weather destroys the warehouse. What does that even mean?
Oh, Jack's initial plan for HooliCon was to showcase the Box 2, but there was frost in the loading dock. And they all exploded or something.
That's right. Okay.
And people died.
from cold weather and warm places. All right.
I don't know if I really have a backup. If I really went back into my notes and thought about it, I'd probably come up with something better than Ehrlich. Just skating around the office in his broken leg sling. But I just appreciated that.
I don't know what she meant by this, but Chelsea, my physical therapist wife, saw that of him with his little leg thing, and it's just like, and said, I think it's funny that he has that. I don't know what she meant, but she took notice of it. So,
like, no one would have that.
I don't.
Like, that's a thing for animals. It very much looked like the things that you put in, like, dogs that have been paralyzed, the little carts they truck around in.
I don't, maybe older people use them would be my guess, because she mainly works with the elderly.
Okay.
Couldn't he just use crutches?
I mean,
I would assume that's what younger people would use.
We've got room for an extra guest.
She is in Crawfordsville. I'll have to.
Okay, fair enough. Really, for any of our listeners who are super concerned about the physical therapy requirements of whatever happened to Ehrlich's knee, we'll let you know at the earliest opportunity. It'll be in the notes for this episode, which we never do. So moving on to Veep, this episode is entitled Judge. So back when Gary had his heart attack and Selena had her much smaller heart attack, Gary asked Selena to come to his birthday party, and Selena has broken many promises to Gary in their time together on the show. And I feel like one of those broken promises was actually to one of his birthday parties, but she keeps the promise this time, probably because she's got nothing that much better to do. And this episode takes place in Alabama at Gary's parents' home for his 40th birthday. We get to meet his family. Very much a specific, possibly stereotypical kind of Southerner. He's got a mom who loves him very much and ignores any possibility of bad news. He's got a father who is very much on the down low with his clerks, but despite that, he takes every opportunity to emasculate his son. And he's got a stillborn twin brother who is memorialized throughout the house with not pictures, obviously. That would be a bridge too far, but like bedrooms that he would have lived in. And I'm sure that Gary's father never told him when he was a child that, why weren't you stillborn? The wrong kid died kind of thing. Who knows?
By on the down low, you mean he's
gay.
A raging homosexual.
Yes. Like, he's like Roy Cohn in Angels of America. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, you've so lost me. I don't know either of those things.
Okay. It's a play that was turned into an HBO miniseries. And Roy Cohn, who was Nixon's lawyer, and I believe he was McCarthy's lawyer too, just famous dirtbag in history, who was also in the closet. There is a scene where he is first diagnosed with AIDS and the doctor implies that he's gay, and he says to the doctor, "I'm not gay, gays are powerless, I am a man who has sex with men." I feel like the father would pretty much put himself in that exact same category. Once Selena shows up for this party, she immediately takes it over for her own ends. She needs a new donor for her library, so she goes with a very Southern oil tycoon who is a big fan of the NRA and the Confederacy, apparently. So there's guns at the party, so there are Confederate flags at the party. Gary tells her a story that he was going to say at his big speech moment about how his father made him feel better as a kid when he couldn't shoot a squirrel, and Selena steals it and says that same thing happened to her when she was a child. Everything works. She woos the donor. Donor's a big fan, but poor Gary is quite upset about this. And they have a brief blow up the day after, but she calms him down by stealing one of Richard's stories and everything is fine with the world. I generally don't feel bad for Gary. Like these are all choices that he's making, hanging out with Selena, whole life about Selena.
I feel like this explains, like, he's obviously gone through some trauma growing up that was never worked out with a counselor. And this episode finally helps explain some of that.
Yes. And like the moment when Gary is watching Selena give or steal his story, and his mom, who also knows this story and recognizes it as Gary's, just puts her head on his shoulder. It's a very sweet moment. But then at the same time, Gary has told his mom that they're engaged. So I don't know. I mean, it is Veep. You never really feel sorry for anybody. But I feel like that's as close as you get with Gary.
Right.
So back in Washington, the government shutdown is continuing. Jonah is engaging in some political pageantry on the steps of a vacant Capitol building, and he accidentally sledgehammers the foot of another Jefferson when he was attempting to sledgehammer a clock in representation of daylight savings time, his mortal enemy. A nice callback to his wood chopping in his congressional ads, which remains some of the highlights of Veep. So this broken-footed congressman, this broken-footed Jefferson, he stages a coup off camera. All of a sudden, Jonah is removed from his high seat with the Jeffersons, and they reach a deal with Montez and the Democrats to fund the government, and Jonah is cut out of the loop.
Do you think Montez is a Democrat?
No, Montez is a Republican.
Oh, okay.
But the Jeffersons are also Republicans.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. You said, I didn't hear if you said Montez. I thought you said Montez and the Democrat.
confused. Well, like the shutdown is purely the Jeffersons doing.
Right.
Like Montez was already, like they did that handshake deal in the office, and then Jonah fucked it up.
Can we talk about Jonah being in the office with Montez?
Yes.
Do you have that in your notes here?
I do not.
Because, like, he meets with, I don't know, one of her advisors and then meets with the president. And he says, I'm not going to rape the president. Like, everyone just assumes he's super rapey. And I think he said something like, it's not a threat. It's a promise. I just remember he's basically promising not to rape the president of the United States. Which
Ben and Kent charge in. What's he done now? I mean, the ceiling is very low for rape jokes. Like, you're going to bump your head if you even attempt it, generally. But I think V nailed it.
Yeah, that was
by making Jonah so stupid and repulsive and useless. Okay, good job, V. You pulled off a rape joke. Well done. Further down in the episode as well, Mike lost his diary. He and Amy scour the route to Alabama, trying to retrace his steps. They find his jacket in a urinal, but they don't find the diary. And the episode ends as they realize that Mike left it at the Washington Post with a journalist who is none too fond of Selena. So this episode like took a big step back from like current events, more recognizable type of politics. It was more personal, more character driven. Not exactly my favorite mode that V operates in, but still a lot of good stuff.
I like them being at the party, and that there was just a lot. I don't have any like specifics, but there was just a lot of small comedy going on. If you're okay making fun of people from the South,
and who isn't?
I meant to throw this into the party. when Richard shows up to meet Gary's mom, and she says, obviously, you must be Richard. And Richard says, oh, yeah, from the glasses. As the
Okay, I don't remember that.
That pretty great, one little pretty great line split. Fantastic. Splitism.
Yeah. It's just a genuine, warm soul that Richard Splett. They have saved, or they've doled out plenty of choice insults for Southerners in Veep, them being all DC insiders who have nothing but contempt for anyone not from, you know, a handful of places. And this episode is no exception. Like, I feel like you get one Deliverance joke, maybe, and they make like two or three of them in this episode. So that was like a little much, even. That's just like low hanging fruit. These characters are all smarter than that.
Right. You haven't mentioned Dan or the news making fun of the news.
I haven't. Yeah.
I have one on here. He did some homeless coverage. I don't know what that was. I've lost track of that note.
That's like their standard. The news is like TV news is useless, where the anchor will go out and like panhandle for money to see what it's like to be homeless.
Oh, that's right. And then they said a World War II letter finally arrives home and ends a marriage.
Yes, I do remember that.
That was deep.
As always, live news or like national news shows are fucking stupid. Just read the paper. Don't waste your time.
And by read the paper, you mean get on the internet.
I still get a paper delivered here.
Oof. And the problem, Byron, what paper do you get?
The AGC, the Atlanta Journal of Constitution. I signed up after the election.
The problem I have here is that the old News Gazette out of Champaign is run by pretty right-wing people. And so this is a good story. So the News Gazette is the paper out of Champaign-Urbana, population 200,000 people, so they can run a paper. All the small towns surrounding have like subsidiaries of the News Gazette. So there's like the Piatt County Journal Republican and the Mahomet Citizen and stuff like that. They're just little spinoffs, but they're under the same umbrella. So the Mahomet Citizen, population 8,000 people, it was always running these like anti-Obama cartoons when I subscribed to the paper.
Okay.
And I wrote a letter to the editor, well, like an email, not like like a personal email, not something to be published in the paper. And she said, "We get emails like this all the time, and I wish there was something that I could do about it. Can I please publish your letter?" But unfortunately, as a public school teacher, I was not comfortable at that time.
Sure.
Having my letter published. But it's just, it's relentless around here.
Do you think your students can infer, like, your political leanings?
Oh, no. They have no idea. I almost,
definitely. Okay. I remember having those conversations with, like, my grade school teachers and them not giving up anything.
I think they, at one point, they were talking about Trump when we were talking about the sum of interior angles of a triangle. And I said,
sure. I think that was in his inaugural address.
And I said, more triangles, less Trump. And they all took that as how much I hate Trump, which is true, but that's not what I meant by that. I really just wanted them to talk about triangles.
I think I saw that sign at the March for Women.
Oh, man. So, no, I purposely almost argue not my beliefs to them.
Sure.
So they have no idea.
You wouldn't even call it like devil's advocating.
I don't even know. I can tow a pretty straight face.
Okay.
Especially as a math teacher.
Sure.
I mean, how often, I'm not supposed to have emotion.
I don't remember math ever, or like anything other than math ever coming up in my math classes.
Right.
There's always one more problem to do.
Exactly. That they can avoid doing.
Anything else in the bulk of this episode before we move on, Brian?
No, I really like looking at that Richard quote from the glasses.
I don't have any real world similarities this week, just because the shutdown stuff makes my eyes glaze over. Not in the show, because it places Jonah in the center of the action, but in real life, it makes my head hurt.
It's sad, like patent trolls. It's something that shouldn't exist.
Yes, I completely agree.
I have a tangential,
sure,
real life one. Shane was supposed to be here for this because he's lived in Georgia longer, but I'll just ask you. Living in Georgia, how many times have you been to Alabama?
None.
The neighboring state. And my answer is the exact same thing, other than when I was a kid and I went to Mobile Bay or something. But I lived in Georgia for one calendar year, and I went to Alabama. I didn't even drive through Alabama once.
I think I've driven through it. Maybe. Maybe.
Exactly.
I can't remember exactly. I did get offered. No. I applied for a job in Conyers, which is like perfectly near to Atlanta. That would have been a great place to work as far as commuting goes. I was all, and like, it was going well. I got the interviewer to laugh. Great stuff. And which is, you know, not something you try to do necessarily, but she was a very personable person here and there.
Right.
And then at a certain point she was like, well, this job, you would do like a month in Conyers and then we would transfer you to Alabama. And I'd be like, well, okay. Keep me in mind for any future positions, please. That was not an option.
Alabama.
Yeah, our usual MMC alienation of some subculture. How many people live in Alabama? How many billions of people?
Alabama as a subculture.
I mean, it's 1/50th of the states in the country. I don't know.
By count, 1/50th by count.
All right, so
we're not even talking. It might be by area.
4 million in Alabama? I don't know. I don't feel like it's that many. It's in like the barely over the halfway point, I would wager.
Oh, man. If you can buy some time, I'll see if Wolfram Alpha can pull up what percentage.
Well, we don't have any more real-world similarities. So, favorite moments, just the sledgehammer on the foot, the expert editing of that, where the second Jonah brings it down on his foot. he starts to react, and then there is a cut away. Fantastic. I exclaimed.
I have that down as a wonderful moment as well. The population of Alabama is 1.5% of the United States.
Okay, and 1 out of 50 is 2.5?
Yes.
Okay.
So right? I no, was, no, yeah. point, no, 2%. 2 is 2%. 2 times 50, yes, yes. 2.5.
Okay.
So you're kind of close.
Okay, yeah, that's a subculture. Alabamans.
What do they call themselves? Alabamians? Alabamians?
A good question. Not everybody can be Hoosiers.
The area of Alabama is 1.41% of the United States.
This is how we get back in the good graces of Alabamans, is by just reverentially saying facts about their state.
I'll tell you what, Wolfram Alpha is so good at this stuff.
Wolfram Alpha?
So it's the math behind Siri. Anytime you ask Siri a math or geography question,
okay,
she pulls from Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram Alpha, headquartered in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
And it's just like a almanac type of
no,
thing?
No, it's like a super duper calculator.
Okay.
Like, it's
a dynamic thing, like a learning type of dealie?
You can basically type in any math equation and it can solve it for you. I mean, to the utmost complexity, and it'll show you the steps to solve it. But they've been working on their learning algorithm for like combining words and math together. Like I typed in population of Alabama / population of USA for the division sign, and it spit out the percentage for me. So there you go.
Amazing.
Alabamian.
Alabamian? I've never heard that.
Alabamian, Alabamian. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah,
all right. Hold on. Let's see here. I can't get Wikipedia to work on my phone.
Favorite moment, Brian?
Alabamian. Alabamian. Bamian. I think it's Alabamian.
Yeah.
There we go. That's my favorite moment, is figuring out how to pronounce Alabamian.
So all we're left with is who won the week. I mean, should we go further to rebuild our relationships and say Alabama won the week?
No.
Alabama. I mean, they're not going to win the season, certainly. But
or anything. I mean, other than college football. They won football. Spend a lot of money on that coach. Whatever his name is. I lost my notes in my look in my search for the percentage of the population here.
Well, nothing but good things to say about any of these, which is like rare, I think, for you.
The good things for Veep is because I didn't write anything down about Selena because she's such an ass. I just can't handle her. Like, she's the worst. We didn't get any good Kent stuff in.
I don't remember. I don't believe we did.
Let me look at my... Man, that's so tough. Ed Chambers versus my glasses.
Everything
obviously
else.
Obviously from the glasses. I'm going to go with Veep. Or not Veep, sorry. Silicon Valley because of Ed Chambers.
That was
comedy gold.
I would have to agree. Like the patent troll fit very nicely in the season, in the series, but just one episode because it is a sad thing. It's good to see him vanquished, even if it meant Richard is like cheating a little bit as CEO. And yes, Ed Chambers and the smart fridge. There was just a lot going on in that episode. So I think that one takes it. I don't know what the score is. I don't know if the Bernie Madoff trailer is storming up the rankings.
Have you watched any of that yet?
I haven't, no. I'm interested. I mean, those HBO movies, they don't ever really like stand out critically. And they're going to be on HBO Go forever. They seem to just have like a very standard formula. You like adapt a book or adapt a real life event. You get some A-list actors to play them, and then you rake in the Emmys because there's not a lot of other movies, like TV movies anymore.
That's true.
I feel like Silicon Valley must be winning just because Shane and you have been pretty down on Veep this season. I don't know. We'll figure that out before our next episode. That's all we got for this episode of the Munich Movie Club podcast. We'll be back shortly with the latest round of episodes and the finales, which are airing on Sunday, the 25th. And then coming up after that is Game of Thrones, when this movie club really kicks into high gear and talks about a TV show. We'll presumably be doing, like we did last year, like a catch-up series or a catch-up episode where we talk about season 6 before season 7 starts. We're doing the fantasy draft again. We'll probably have a short episode where we talk about that. That is not something I feel like we're collectively proud of as a group. The episode of that we put out last year, I feel like that was funny for us, but awful for everyone else. So let's see if we can't improve on that this year. Check us out on the internet at mediocremovie.club. Our current movie is Winter's Bone, the excellent Winter's Bone, and we'll be following that up with a review of the movie Don't Think Twice. We've also, as usual, got all of our extra side reviews on there as well. Silence is a movie, like several best of movies from 2016. I'm just getting to that period in my review hopper where I'm reviewing movies that I watched in January and February, and that is often like end of year best review or like an end of year movies that I'm just catching up on. So like La La Land, Elle, which played at Eberfest that I sadly missed, Silence, Martin Scorsese's latest movie, and I Am Not Your Negro, which I believe is now playing on Amazon Prime and is an excellent documentary that I would recommend to anyone. Those are all on the website as well. Like our Facebook page, Munich Movie Club, review us on iTunes. That's very helpful. Under Munich Movie Club, we'll be churning out the content in the next several weeks. So I'll surely be talking to you soon, Brian. Thank you. Yep. Thank you for joining me tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
Have a good night.
See ya.